to MGO Radio, Glasgow Point, Graham.
Thank you.
There we go.
Thank you. There we go. We had this whole streak going where you were getting it right, and I'm like, okay, we'll nail them after the bye week.
7.12? 10.
It's the number of games we've had, right?
Is it?
Yeah, because we always end up talking about the last game on this one, so it's always the number of games we've had. Yeah.
Doesn't matter.
Okay.
Michigan faces Maryland, not the, like, burning husk of what used to be Maryland, as is tradition, where they toss off some guy who's a quarterback who transferred from a service academy and looks like an eighth grader and is completely consumed by Mo Hurst, or there's a Bortenschlager rolling around sounding like a knockoff Jägermeister sort of quarterback type person. Nope. Their quarterback is healthy.
Yeah, for now. White. I mean, he's going to be facing David Ojabo and Aiden Hutchinson, and their backup is quite an interesting story. So, I mean, we could be right back into the same Maryland narrative a couple days
from now. So, Talia Tagovailoa, make sure that before this Saturday, you check out our sponsors. MGO Radio is sponsored by Underground Printing. UGP has 3 retail locations in Ann Arbor and offer thousands of units of Michigan athletic products. Check out UGPMichiganApparel.com. We'd also like to thank all of our associate sponsors, Peak Wealth Management, Homeshare Lending, Ann Arbor Elder Law, Michigan Law Grad, Human Element, the Phil Klein Insurance Group, Team Fan Club, Prentice 4M, and Signal Wire, which we are using right now. I would especially recommend getting your affairs in order with Ann Arbor Elder Law before you meet Hutchinson and a child.
I mean, there's history, and he's not a very big guy, so, you know, it's impressive that he's stayed healthy this long, because another one of those offensive lines.
So let's talk about the Maryland offense. It is a very pass-oriented object. They run about half as much as Michigan does, and their 3 top backs combined have about as many carries as Hassan Haskins, who's been splitting time all year. They have 3 season-ending injuries at wide receiver. They have a sort of a move tight end who's like 6'2", 240, kind of an exciting player with a great name.
Chigozium Okonkwo.
There we go. Seth will now try to pronounce and maybe get it right.
Seth prepared that one. I spent quite a lot of this week saying Chigozium Okonkwo to myself.
And they're down to kind of bare bones at wide receiver, except for the random 5-star they flipped from LSU. So that will be a guy to watch.
Yeah, Rakeem Jarrett, they get like one of those guys every like 5 years at wide receiver. They had Steph Diggs like 10 years ago, and Jarrett is a DC kid, and they every so often keep one of those DMV area guys who would go to a better school. And he's a really good player, but the problem is he's the only guy. They were supposed to have one of the better receiving cores in the league with Dante Demas, who was a really talented guy, and Jayshon Jones, who had been really good a few years back, but those guys are both out for the year. The freshman who replaced them is out for the year, and now they're just kind of down to Jarrett, and he's going to make a few plays, but with Michigan having DJ Turner just coming off the performance he did against Jahan Dotson, I don't think that's like a big concern at this time. And the big question for me with the offense is talking about Talia Tagovailoa, because
all right, now we're 1-for-2
on
that one.
he's a Madden quarterback. Like I've heard people say that, but he is. He is a guy who the pressure comes because they don't have an offensive line, and his first instinct is, I can outrun it. No matter the scenario, I can outrun them. And so he starts running 10 yards backwards and then turns to his right, and he either runs straight into a defensive end for a back-breaking negative 15-yard sack, or he runs to the side and he finds a receiver. Doesn't matter if the receiver is open or not, he heaves it. And that's the whole experience of Talia. And sometimes it's going to be like a 3rd-and-19 conversion that makes you scream. And other times it's going to be thrown into double coverage and maybe picked off. And he's averaging more than 1 interception per game in the conference. He makes a lot of bad decisions, but he also makes some heroic plays. And overall, he's asked to drop back like 30 to 50 times a game behind no offensive line. So I give him some sympathy, but there are really bad tendencies there that Michigan can exploit with their pass rush.
Yeah, and So as a result, this is another very screen-heavy team, particularly wide receiver screens. Jarrett gets a lot of those. They throw it to the running backs a ton. And part of that's because of the injuries, of course. But this has not been a strength of the Michigan defense, snuffing out screens, especially early in the year. So that is some mild concern. I think that if you are limited to that kind of thing, eventually it will catch up to you, especially after Michigan has kind of gone through a couple of games where the college crap may have surprised Mike McDonald, but you know, he can adapt. He's a human being who does things. So they're going to move the ball a little bit, but it's hard to see them putting together any sort of extended drive that doesn't end up in some sort of passing down where it's men versus boys on defensive end and offensive tackle.
Yeah, and I think their running backs aren't terrible, and their yard per carry clips aren't bad. But what happens is they get like one 30-yard run, and that taints the average because they just don't run it. So you end up with each guy having seven carries per game and one decent run. That spikes the yards per carry clip, but they don't succeed often on the ground, and then they just give up. And they run about 25% of the time, and then they just had enough pretty much. But their running backs aren't bad. It's just they don't give them anything to do. The area they are bad in, though, they cannot pass protect to save their lives. I clipped that a little bit. All three of them who are still healthy have PFF pass blocking grades under 50, which is
the offensive line.
I'm talking about the running backs.
That's been a Maryland thing for a while, and something that we've noticed about Teyon Fleet Davis for so long, I think it's in the 2016 faux film, that he's really bad at pass pro. So this is
still the same.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean,
this is the guy who's in that photo that we always use because we have like one photo of one guy from like 2016. And like that guy just always appears in our Maryland coverage because we have a shot of him still and he's still on the team.
Oh, I found there was a guy. I should shout him out because he's posting Creative Commons photos on Flickr for Maryland. And I was like, all right, like a kindred spirit. You guys talk for a second. I'm going to shout this guy out as soon as I can figure out who he is again.
Yeah, no, I mean, just what I was saying is that when opponents blitz Maryland, the offensive line isn't holding up well. And then I can't tell you how many times the running back went to chip a defensive end who's already blocked and just ignores the free rusher coming right up the middle to hit Tagovailoa. Yeah,
they do not have a center. So, like, they keep on taking Spencer Anderson, who's their right tackle. And he's been around for a while, too. And they keep on putting him back at center. I think they tried a freshman for a while this year, and he might actually get back in the game, Eric Harris. And, like, that's been their thing for a while. They just have not had a center. So they don't get in. Spencer Anderson is not going to get them into the right coverages or the right protections at all. The freshman was even worse. But I think they're worse when they put Anderson in the center because then they bring in Delmar Glaze at right tackle.
Yeah, he can't protect at all.
Yeah, right. I mean, he's a decent run blocker. But they're not running the ball. So I don't know what Mike Loxley's doing there.
Well, that's a sentence that's never been uttered before. The guy I'm trying to shout out is Billy Sabatini of allproreels.com, putting up Creative Commons photos for Maryland players on Flickr. Thank you, dude. All right, the defense, the Maryland defense, is very bad. You guys gave a cyan to both defensive tackles and both linebackers, which is
bad. This was being kind. Alex came to me, he's like, what's our record for, I think this is his first question, like, for putting the thing together. He's like, how many people am I allowed to sign on defense? And I'm like, well, here's the record. And I went through and like found, what was it? I think Illinois in 2018 might have been up there. And like Rutgers 2016 was certainly a contender. I guess Maryland uses so many backups and they all deserve signs, according to Alex, that like, I think we broke the record this time.
Whenever they were in, it was just obvious those guys couldn't hack it, but the starters couldn't either. And they often play with a five-man defensive line where they roll all three defensive tackles that they use often and wasn't helping at all. And the linebackers really are the crippling part of the defense because they don't recognize where the hole to rush is. They, for whatever reason, think the objective of playing linebacker is to engage the blocker most ferociously instead of tackling the guy with the football. And so that's a problem, and we're just totally lost on any coverages over the middle. And so you've got these defensive tackles who get cleared out. The linebackers don't know what's going on. And to me, that plays really favorably to Michigan. Their ends aren't terrible. I did the danger man for Sam Okwuonu on the one side, and then they've got Lautez Rogers as the jack, which can drop into coverage. Those guys are okay. They helped paper some of the cracks of the defensive tackles. But the central problem for this defense in their passing numbers, when you look at it, they're allowing everybody to pass against them. The problem is they blitz all the time, but they don't get home enough. And if they don't get home, they're playing cover one, and their corners are not able to hack it long enough if there's no pressure on the quarterback. And I thought one of their corners, Jacorian Bennett, actually did a decent job on Jaden Reed for MSU, but he's not going to do a decent job on Jaden Reed if he's asked to cover him for 10 seconds. And they were rarely coming close to Peyton Thorne. They had two sacks, but outside of that, not a lot there. And if you're not getting pressure on the QB, that's a recipe for disaster, especially if you're rushing five often, which they did.
Yeah, so there is that kind of pattern where if you just look at the sack rate, they actually have a respectable sack rate because they're sending five guys across the scrimmage a lot, the line of scrimmage a lot. But if you actually look at pass rush win rate, that is not where you want it to be. So for an offensive line in Michigan that has, until last week, been pretty much lights out against the pass rush, none of these guys are at the level of the Penn State defensive ends. they just don't really have any individually talented rushers. So as long as Michigan gets pickups, it's just going to be all day for McNamara to throw. And as we've seen over the past 3 weeks, McNamara seems to be kind of coming into his own.
Yeah, they do have one. We'll get into McNamara in the next segment, obviously. The Penn State segment. But like Brandon Jennings, unfortunately, the guy that Michigan had committed right up until the end, he's actually got some talent. Like, he has no idea what he's doing out there yet, but they put him but understandable, true freshman, right? But like they put him out there sometimes in pass rush situations, and you can see the evident talent. I mean, I guess score one for George Hilo in his scouting, but kind of sucks to see that guy get away, especially to be on this horrible of a defense when, like, we're looking for guys who can replace Ojabo eventually or sooner than later.
Well, right, it's the story of Maryland is that they have talent. They have a talented quarterback. They have a talented wide receiver. They have some talented pass rushers. They have a really talented safety in Nick Cross, but there's not a lot of coaching going on in College Park, so...
How dare you say that about a man who led New Mexico to two victories?
He does tend to fill his staff with guys who, like, everyone was targeting as recruiters. I don't want to start naming names out here, but, like, that seems to be Loxley's deals, that, like, everybody he's pulled on his staff is a dude that, like, was on someone else's staff as, like, the bag manager, basically.
Yeah, and when they succeed, it's the talent coming through, right? It's Talia running around and then hitting Rakeem Jarrett in double coverage while Jarrett jumps up and toe taps, right? It's just all talent taking over when they succeed. It's right. Never schematic or being well prepared.
Right. The problem is it's like my kid's Lego collection, right? He saves up to get his like $150 Lego, and then like everything else is like some dollar store piece of something, right? Like he doesn't have like a solid, you know, train set or anything like that like the other kids.
So what I'm hearing here is that your kid buys the nice stuff and you buy him crap.
No. It's more like he can do little things to earn his little bucket I don't get into the whole chart situation, but there's a chart.
There's
and when
a
he gets
chart?
To the end of the chart, he gets there's a chart that he like gets all of his things done. And then like this is our Maryland preview here. I don't know how much how deep
Fisher.
You want to go to, but
I'm
there's
still
also
a little surprise.
Are you
UFRing your child? What is his score
clean his room. Plus three.
Is this more of a, like a defensive end situation where he's got to be plus 20 to be good, or is this like a linebacker situation where if he gets zero, that's great?
Threw a truck at his sister. Dead on.
No, that's not right. That's not.
No, but there's also a lot of bribery that goes on in my house. So we end up going to Five Below a lot, and you know, right to the Legos or the Transformers get bought anyway. That's our Maryland preview, right? Do we have anything else from Maryland, or do you want to talk more about my parenting?
Their kicking is bad. but we can take a break now.
Want the perfect game day outfit? Underground Printing has unique, great-fitting U of M apparel and officially licensed apparel from legendary Michigan names like Woodson, Howard, Ufer, and more. UGP also specializes in custom printed apparel and promotional items for groups, events, and businesses. Whether you need one shirt as a gift or 1,000 shirts for a charity walk, Underground can customize almost anything for groups large or small. To learn more, visit Underground Printing at one of our three convenient locations around Ann Arbor or online at undergroundshirts.com. It's painless. It's online. It's group ordering made easy for your next custom printed apparel order. Pogo from Underground Printing will save you time and hassle. Whether you're selling shirts for a fundraiser, organizing a large event, trying to collect sizes and payments for a family reunion, or, you know, ordering a whole bunch of shirts with your Kickstarter, Underground Printing is here to help. Save time and hassle every step of the way with their easy-to-use site. No more guessing what to order, chasing people down to pay, wasting time trying to sort out the order. They'll set it up. You can just sit back and relax. They'll even take care of individual shipping. To learn more about Pogo, visit them at any of their convenient locations or at pogo.undergroundshirts.com. If you want to see where our post-game podcast happens, or if you need a spot to land in Ann Arbor, check out 4M, Prentice Partners' beautiful brand-new flagship property at 830 Henry Street in Lower Burns Park and across the bridge from the Big House. Their 11 spacious 6-bedroom, 6-bath suites feature state-of-the-art digital capabilities and are laid out for comfortable, efficient collaboration. You can also rent a 4M unit for shorter stays, say if you want to come to town for a football weekend. I want to add myself that they're also taking over Lucky's. We're really excited about their plans for that space. So if you're by the stadium, swing by 830 Henry or visit Prentice4M.com.
Hey, it's Nick Hopwood, founder and president at Peak Wealth Management. We have a lot in common. We both went to Michigan. We're both huge fans, but I'm concerned about how much time you're spending on Michigan football recruiting. This could be time spent with me poring over your cash flow and Roth conversion strategy. How are these Roth conversions going to get done with you spending all your time and energy on MGO Blog looking at the next five-star recruits? Hey, all kidding aside, if you're addicted to MGO Blog and you want to outsource some of your financial planning to an expert, consider us, peakwm.com/MGOblog. At Peak, we work with people in a variety of situations. Some of our clients are young professionals looking to optimize their savings and investments. For young people, time is the key. Some of our clients are super affluent trying to figure out when they can retire. Some are high net worth retirees looking for a second opinion on how their money's working for them. Get your second opinion at peakwm.com/mgoblog.
Peak Wealth Management.
Retire with confidence.
In southeastern Michigan, the yearly cost for a nursing home averages
approximately $100,000.
It doesn't have to, though. Reed McCarthy founded Ann Arbor Elder Law after handling a tricky situation for his own family. Years of experience later, his boutique firm works with clients across southeast Michigan dealing with Medicaid planning, long-term care, and tax, disability, and family law, not to mention family dynamics. If you have a family member who may need that level of care, or if you're ready to start your own estate plan, Reed can give you a plan for the future. Visit AnnArborElderLaw.com or call 734-945-9693. That's
734-945-9693. In the break, Seth just told me he met the guy who does music for World of Warcraft, and that was one of his songs. And
that's he's amazing.
Seth sentence I've ever heard.
I listen to video game music while I work because it gets me in the flow, because that's what that music's written for. And he's
right,
the best.
Well, it's good.
Yeah.
I recommend Rat-a-Tat. Rat-a-Tat does like faux video game music. That's very good. Anyway, we're trying to talk about what happened in the Penn State game, what we learned from the UFRs.
Yes, you wanted to see my charting, so I got my chart out. Here's the chart for our video viewers.
Is that...
This isn't the kid's responsibility chart.
McNamara's chart?
be polite, wash hands, eat dinner. Is that... Oh, the McNamara's chart. All right. McNamara gridded out... even in like the plus minus and in like our, I mean, it wasn't great in our downfield success rating, which is weird because I got to the end of the game and I thought he did well. And the reason for that was dead ons and, you know, we add those pluses whenever he's throwing under pressure. And there were quite a lot of those. So that was kind of the story of the passing game, is that Michigan met some pass rushers that they had not seen the like of before, and Ryan Hayes got pretty badly abused.
Yeah, I mean, everybody remembers the sack strip on 3rd and 11. There's another sack that Penn State got that came through Hayes as well.
Mm-hmm.
So a little bit of a reality check on Michigan's pass protection because, I mean, it's obviously very good. You don't get to this point in the season getting into the Penn State having given up just 3 sacks without actually doing something right. But I think that kind of dials back the is Ryan Hayes immediately an NFL prospect kind of talk.
And also, you know, there are like guys like that usually get doubled in the NFL as well. Like, you don't see the NFL teams going 5 wide a lot when you're facing on 3rd and 11 when you're facing like a defensive end in the NFL.
We already talked about that on the podcast, like, so we don't have to recap.
I think we talked about it on GKA too.
So
I know, but in the context of Ryan Hayes, that might be just a little bit beyond, like, that guy was just beyond him, especially to last that long. So it was quite a come down for him. Like, he got pretty badly abused, and Stuber did not, going against the same guys.
Right. Defensively, a lot of people were talking about Michigan containing Jahan Dotson for much of this game. Who really stood out in that regard?
That would be DJ Turner II, who afterwards I was like, can I star this guy? I have a rule hard and fast about putting a star in a guy like after one performance or two performances. Like, you want to see it over a long period of time, and especially with a cornerback with Ohio State coming up.
Yeah, don't do that.
Yeah. It's like, it's hard not to, because he really, really came through, and in different types of coverage, too. So, like, he had a couple plays that he made in cover 2 or cover 3. When he was in man defense, they got the touchdown and the 2-point conversion on him. Neither one of those, I thought, were, like, badly contested. Like, okay,
no, you know, it's good coverage when someone gets hit on 2 plays in a row, and I'm like, I'm not even mad about that.
Right, right, right. And then, like, it was from the very drop. Like, the first play was to Parker Washington on a skinny post where he came up and he was in press man coverage and took him away. Like, he just knocked it right. And it was not even like a – you weren't afraid. As soon as you saw it, they come on screen, right? The ball gets downfield, and there's the cornerback with the receiver, and you're like, oh, he's got that. Which
I don't know what Michigan secondary you've been watching over the last decade and a half, but until the ball hits the ground, I'm afraid.
Fair. Very, very, very fair. Very fair. And, you know, but really kind of my fear level has shifted to I check the number on the cornerback, and if it's 4, I'm like, Vincent, gone. And then if it's 5, I'm like, oh, it's Turner. And that's a feeling that we have not had since the last generation left.
Yeah, so the performance against the ground game was a little bit disappointing considering Penn State had not really been able to move the ball at all on the ground. And I think a large part of that was Michigan was keeping guys back to defend Dotson a lot. But even so, I kind of feel like I was hoping for a little bit better from the defensive tackles.
See, when I went and did in the UFR, and the tackles did fine, they were holding up to doubles, and the linebackers would run to the wrong spot. And I thought that Penn State did a good job of basically making this game into linebacker hell, because they had to drop back to help with Dotson. They also had to, like, get screens all the time. Penn State kept on putting 4 guys to the side and, like, running screens out there all the time. That becomes the linebacker's job. So he's getting pulled back, pulled sideways on both sides. And then he's also got to deal with the fact that, you know, their quarterback's going to run in this game. So then they had to get that. And, you know, I thought Josh Ross just I think he graded out just barely negative. And I was like, that's okay. That was all right. Colson got abused. Like, that was just one step too far for the freshman to, like, have to deal with as much as they gave him. But that was Penn State's game plan, was let's make this life increasingly hard on these linebackers and get them to try to jump at things. And when they did jump at things, they got in trouble. When they stayed back, they gave up 4 or 5 yards, and that's why it felt a little leaky at times.
Any other things that stood out to you that I have not directly addressed yet?
I mean, Ojabo Hutchinson, like, is it boring to talk about them?
I mean, if it's kind of obvious, so we try to avoid the, like, you know, oxygen good takes. But if you want to read out their grades just for, like, defensive end porn, I'll happily listen to them.
I gotta get down to the table there real quick, because I have a lot of pictures of Michigan defenders in the backfield because Penn State was, like, diving at their legs and stuff. Let's see. We got Hutchinson plus 22 minus 5 for plus 17 total. He was timing Penn State snaps, too. Did you notice that?
And
Ojabo, in only 60 snaps, was a plus 14.5 minus 4. So,
all right. That's actually lower than I might have expected. But
yeah, they got held a lot. That was kind of a theme.
You can give them points as long as you put in the refs minus thing. That's the rule.
But
if they get held and it's like real.
But I turn into like a ref whiner, like, especially with these Big Ten road games, I'm going to be putting ref minus every single time. So eventually
I can do it every time. Just the really like egregious ones.
Okay. I don't even try to total it up in this one, because I only stuck to the egregious ones, and there were still plenty of them. But, like, you know, the regular holds, like Penn State, every single play, they put their hands on the outside. They put their hands on the shoulder pads. Like, technically, that's a hold. Technically, that, you know, damages the pass rush. But I'm not going to flag every single one of those. It sounds like whiners. Yeah.
All right. Any discernible difference between Keegan and Zinter and the Filiunga and Barnhart pairing?
Oh, God. I mean, Keegan, Zinter is like the mauler, right? Zinter is very clearly the dude they want on the poles, because when he hits a guy, even if the dude gets like a head start into him, he's still going backwards. I can see why the coaches love him. And then Keegan is the one that, like, the bloggers love. He does Graham Glasgow things all the time.
I mean, that's you.
Well,
you just say the bloggers as if that's not you.
You liked him, too. You're the one who first pointed it out last year, I think, in a UFR when, like, they have that middle linebacker blitz that, like, they don't see before the snap, and then he just very calmly escorts him to the backfield. Like, that is Keegan all the time.
But you can't just start talking about us in the third person.
Us bloggers. He's the one that I'm going to stand for, because like he makes smart plays in the middle of the melee all the time. The linemen, this was a kind of a weird matchup because the defensive tackles are not that great, and they replace the defensive tackles with their defensive ends all the time. So your guards are taking on ends, and then the tackles are trying to like flag down linebackers. They were really hit and miss based off of whether they got to the guy or not. And then later on in the game, it was just very strategic. I thought that Michigan was having a problem with Penn State bringing their safety down all the time and stopping the run, because you'd have Jaquan Brisker like 5 yards off the line of scrimmage when they snapped the ball, and then he'd be at the line of scrimmage when they get to the point of attack. And then their answer was just like very Harbaugh, Bo, like let's just put more guys in the box, right? Michigan goes to 10 guys in the box, only one wide receiver, and now some of those Penn State guys are getting in their way, because what it did is it turns that safety into another linebacker, and then the cornerback is playing that role of the extra guy in the box. The cornerback's a little bit easier guy to kick, a little bit guy to move, and if those guys get blocked, they're actually in the way of the middle linebacker. And that was what caused a lot of those runs later in the game that got, like, you know, 12, 11 yards off the edge. Very similar to what Illinois was doing against them. And, I mean, that ultimately won the game for them, right? That last drive was just stacking the box and running outside, and then they had a cutback planned in case Penn State's tackles didn't dive as well, so if they tried to double up or they got stuck inside of Keegan, Haskins was reading that block. And I think this goes back to why they were using Haskins so much in this game, is because they needed that to be live in order to like stop Penn State from cheating too many guys out to the edge. So he hit a lot of big runs by cutting back into the guts, into the A-gap, when their tackle didn't slant far enough or their tackle got stuck behind Keegan.
All right. All right, we're going to take a break, come back, talk some basketball.
Yay.
At Peak Wealth, we believe we can help you retire with confidence. It's Nick Hopwood, certified financial planner from
Peak Wealth Management
in Plymouth. I graduated from Michigan in 2001 with an econ degree and founded Peak Wealth Management in 2014. Now we have over $240 million of assets under management. As a freshman in 97, winning the national championship in football and hockey didn't get any better than that. Both my wife and I lived in Bursley that year, and it's crazy because we never actually met while living in the same dorm. Probably because she had a car and I had to ride the bus. But we named our dog Bursley anyway, and he's on the payroll here at Peak Wealth Management. At Peak, we're fee-based. We're your fiduciary, which means everything we recommend is always in your best interest. We partner with leading institutional money managers, focus on low fees, and make sure every client has a financial plan covering retirement, college, tax, estate, insurance, and cash flow. Simply put, we are
Peak Wealth Management,
your comprehensive financial coach. Book your second opinion at peakwm.com/mgoblog.
Peak Wealth Management.
Retire with confidence.
Passion for e-commerce.
Sell stuff online.
Security. Performance.
Conversion.
Beautiful user experiences.
Belle expérience utilisateur.
Monthly marketing.
PPC SEO.
Make your user a customer.
Conversion.
Eau de Parfum for online retailers. Love your website. Let Human Element show you how. Available at human-element.com and find department stores, not find department stores.
Here's a thing people say. Seth, tell me about your insurance.
I'm actually glad you asked me about that because I just changed my insurance and I'm really happy I did.
Let me guess. You use Phil Klein and Owen Rosen of the Phil Klein Insurance Group.
They are MGO blog readers and they don't advertise during football games.
And they've got a 5-star rating on anything you would care to see. Call Owen at 248-682-7445 or visit them online at philklineinsurance.com.
During these challenging times, it is important to have a Michigan man in your corner. If you or someone in your life has questions, concerns, or just want to discuss your legal rights, give attorney Jonathan Paul a call at 248-924-9458 or visit his website, michiganlawgrad.com. John asks you all to be safe. We're going to get through this together. And as always, go blue. Want the perfect game day outfit? Underground Printing has unique, great-fitting U of M apparel and officially licensed apparel from legendary Michigan names like Woodson, Howard, Ufer, and more. UGP also specializes in custom printed apparel and promotional items for groups, events, and businesses. Whether you need one shirt as a gift or 1,000 shirts for a charity walk, Underground can customize almost anything for groups large or small. To learn more, visit Underground Printing in one of our 3 convenient locations around Ann Arbor or online at undergroundshirts.com.
Welcome back to MGO Radio, something about something. We're going to talk basketball now. We welcome in Matt D. from EndlessMotor.com. How you doing, Matt?
Good. About yourselves?
Good. A little bit of a disappointing outcome against Seton Hall. Michigan loses by a couple points there at the end, kind of a crunch time game where Michigan couldn't come out on top. A lot of little things go wrong. and you know, you're looking at this team and got Devontae Jones, who's a little bit too aggressive on the defensive end, falls out again. You've got Caleb Houston, who's having some defensive struggles. You know, he didn't hit shots in this game, but that's going to happen. Sometimes you don't hit shots. And then you have Eli Brooks playing out of his mind, Hunter Dickinson playing really well, but you don't really get a third person to step up there.
Yeah, so some of the macro level thoughts for me just coming out of that game and maybe the first 3 games in general is it seems that the weak spot on the team is sort of that 3-4 position, not getting a ton of production there as a unit. Obviously, Brian, I heard you on the roundtable sort of outline some of the struggles that Houston has had on both ends, but just as a unit in general. And, you know, that Seton Hall team sort of fits the profile of some of the teams that we've seen in the past that maybe we've struggled with at times in terms of an Illinois with bigger guards that they can kind of top lock and trap. And one thing that I haven't seen people talk about, and we attacked those sort of teams that top lock and trap with our guards with the big on the back end that play drop coverage. We did this at times last year, and I thought we would utilize it against Seton Hall, but we didn't see it. I don't know if you guys recall this, but we saw this not frequently last year, but it wasn't rare to see it, the pick and seal. That's how you attack drop coverage from a lengthy big. And what that entails is you see it a lot at the NBA level, right? So you get the ball screen, and the rolling big, whether it be Dickinson or Diabate, instead of rolling to the rim, essentially what they become is a lead blocker for your running back. And who's ever the ball handler in PNR, whether that be Jones or Eli, they sort of put the defender in jail. What that means is you put them on your backside, you pause, and they can't go through you or it's a foul. You wait for your big to give you the lead block, and then you go finish at the bucket. And that's what Franz did a lot. Now, Brian, you sort of outlined Houston's struggles, and he would be the ideal candidate for that since he's got some size, but obviously he sort of struggled offensively. So maybe that's why we didn't see that, but if we see that sort of team later on down the road, I think that pick and seal is what we will see to sort of counter that drop coverage by a legit seven-footer on the back end.
Yeah, and one of the things that kind of puzzled me a little bit is that we saw Dickinson go to work on the block against Obiagu a couple of times, not really that frequently, and he was able to put Obiagu under the basket and score, and then a couple other times he's able to draw the defense and the Michigan had good shots off rotation, and it just felt like they weren't able to enter the ball as effectively as they did last year.
Yeah, and I spoke with Seth about this. We talked about some of this. I went back, watched the film in depth, and the 94 feet ball pressure on Devontae kind of ate up. We weren't getting into our sets until like 18 seconds left on the clock. So at that point, it's really difficult to run like a motion weak because it's a slow development play, right? So
yeah.
If you're going to get the ball to Dickinson with 7 seconds left, what they're going to do is just bring a late double, and then you basically have nothing left. And you know they're going to sag off Johns, and that's just sort of a different story where he's not really willing to shoot. You don't have time to attack a closeout in that scenario. But, yeah, he fared really well in those possessions that he did get. Probably needed to get him the ball a bit more. But another thing I watched on film, and I tweeted this and I clipped it, Michigan went Spain heavy with Eli. Who is that against Buffalo? Yeah, right. And it was really, yeah, really effective. Willard and Seton Hall had that scouted. They were on it. Ibiago was looping around before Caleb was even setting the back screen. They were, like, well prepared for that. Like, you have to give Willard a ton of credit for scouting that play. But, you know, the other thing I'd like to touch on, right, is that, and Brian, you touched on this, Eli Brooks was absolutely phenomenal this game. Like, seriously. But for him, this may have been like a 15 to 20 point loss, like on both ends of the court. Like, I think the story of the season so far is his uptick as an on-ball playmaker. Now, we're working with a small sample size, but if this is in fact a consistent thing, I think a lot of the backup guard concerns are alleviated to a certain extent, and that's pretty big for a team that's young with the bench guys on the guard rotation.
So by that, you mean you can play Eli at the point and just bring in Bufkin or whoever at the two?
Yeah, so like when you think about it in terms of the NBA, right, it allows you to stagger. So maybe you start off Eli and Jones together, which obviously you do, but instead of riding Eli, let's say, 12 minutes before it gets his break, maybe you just give him, when is the first media timeout? 8 minutes in? Maybe you give him a blow then, let him rest for 2 or 3 minutes, and then he gets an extra minute or two in there because of, you know, the entity that the college sports has become because of the 10-minute timeouts or whatever, and then you put him back in and you give Jones a blow. And the second thing that it allows you to do, right, it allows you to start thinking about Bufkin as more of a wing because your guard rotation is kind of solidified because now Eli can slide to the one. And if you're not getting a lot of production from your 3-4 spot, then you maybe give him a look because Bufkin had a really good stint at the end of that first half. He missed some rotations in the second half, don't get me wrong. I mean, he's a freshman. It's going to happen. But I'd be inclined to give him a bit more rope there, given what we've seen and the struggles from that small forward position.
Yeah, I mean, it kind of feels like Michigan doesn't really have someone who can check a 6'6 wing right now. Like, you know, Williams did a decent job against Buffalo, but once you get to the high major level, like there was really no one on the roster who I'm like, okay, this is a fairly capable high major wing. Let's just stick him on this guy and it'll be fine. Like Franz last year, just erased guys. And to go from Franz this year to that situation of the three this year, I think is a major downgrade that we anticipated. But I don't think we really were cognizant of how big that gap was going to be.
Yeah, so, I mean, there's really sort of no way around it, right? Houston's a freshman. Like, along with that, you're going to get some natural struggles. But, you know, to exacerbate the issue, like, he's just not fleet of foot. I mean, it's really just that simple. Like, he just...
Yeah, he looks like a four, right? He doesn't look like a three.
Yeah, like, he just... In terms of agility, he's simply not capable, at least at this point. Given his mental acumen and his physical limitations of just, he's not capable of checking a legitimate three. I mean, it's just really kind of that simple. So, you know, you try to sort of hide him on just the shooter types. And unfortunately, Michigan's faced two teams where the three is not just a shooter. Like, ideally, you want him to check, let's say, Justin Arntz from Ohio State. That's like a, yeah, I mean, that's just the reality. But that's who you want him to check, because that guy is no threat to attack a closeout. He's no threat to put him in ball screen action where, you know, I tweeted this, and I don't know if you guys saw this. Houston does really well as a low man defender, meaning he can just rotate over, take two steps, and come in at the last minute and sort of alter a shot. But the problem is that's the profile of a big, and he's not that. He has the instincts and the agility of a big, but he's a wing. He's wing size. So to sort of tie back into what you were saying, you know, I know it's not going to be popular because everybody wants to focus on offensive fit, but the counter to that is the defensive fit. And there's one guy in this roster who is capable of checking a 6'7 wing and get downhill, and I think we all know who that is. Like, he's basically capable of checking anybody on any roster, and that's Diabate. So
yeah,
the question is how much are you going to be able to do offensively with him and Dickinson on the court at the same time? My counter to that is, and again, we don't know it because the sample's not big enough, the only thing I focus on is what are you on the net? Are you a net positive or a net negative when it comes to the score? So maybe your offensive efficiency slides to, what, 1.01 or 0.98. But if your defensive efficiency is 0.92, well, it's a net positive. So that's all I care about. I'm not saying that it will be that, but it's something that I'd probably be inclined to at least give it a shot because, I mean, you guys saw it just like I did. Seton Hall tried to run ball screens on him three times, and what happened all three times to those guards? Like, they were swallowed up. He kicked the ball out to the perimeter. Guy tries to attack him on a closeout. Musa beats him to the spot twice, and he comes up with the block. Like, there are, what, 10 people in the country that can do that? This guy's a freshman, so I don't know. Yeah. And he's shown some things as a face-up offensive player, like, that are really, really intriguing. I think he's got a better handle than I probably anticipated. The free throw shooting is going to be a bit of an adventure. I'm sure we can all see that. But, I mean, I think we just have to sort of call it for what it is. Maybe there's an improvement offensively with other options on the court, but if those other options are, and I don't think it's an exaggeration, if they're giving up 30 points, I mean, to the opposition, what are you going to do?
Yeah, I mean, I don't disagree. Like, I think you look at those high-low sets that they were running with Brandon Johns last year after Livers got injured, and you, like, put Diabate in some of those situations, and you're like, yeah, he can do that. And either as a passer or as the guy receiving the ball, like, I think that's viable. Maybe it's not as efficient as going four out around Hunter Dickinson, but they got a big hole on the team, and that does seem like the best option to patch it.
So what do you guys think? So the biggest, for me, it wasn't a surprise, but I think to everybody that's watched Michigan, and to sort of tag along with what Brian said in terms of the high-low sets, Diabate as a passer has been really intriguing. Like, he's had some really strong moments. So the way you alleviate the spacing, right? In Michigan, Juwan did try to do this. You slip screens, you run go screens. You use that aggressive defense against themselves. But if you have Diabate and Horns or whatever set you have at the top of the key as a passer, it really alleviates a lot of those spacing issues. And I think that's probably what
Dickinson's
we're looking
at. A great passer too, right? Yeah. So, like, you have a lot of versatility there. You don't have to be pigeonholed into one guy as the high guy and one guy as the low guy like Minnesota was with Jordan Murphy and Oturu. Like, Oturu was a low guy and Jordan Murphy was a high guy, and that kind of made their sets kind of static. You don't have to do that here.
No.
So, and the other also, like, sorry, the best things that Terrence Williams has done on offense at Michigan has been run high-low with Hunter Dickinson. So, like, I think that's a something that you explore.
Yeah, and I and what Brian said, Dickinson's one of the two best passers on the team. It's unquestionable, right? So the other thing that does if you run a Diabate is the forward. I know everybody talks about, you know, spacing and shooting. But if you put him at the four and the high low and he's the low man, he's probably going to have a size advantage on the opposing four, where if he just seals the guy underneath the rim, it's basically an automatic two and probably an and one in a lot of scenarios. So I don't know. Me, personally, you know, we could talk about all the schematics, the X's and O's all we want. I think for me what it comes down to is there anybody on this team equipped to check a high major wing that's probably an all-conference level player? And there's probably only one solution, and so I think you have to at least explore it. I mean, it's really just that simple.
Yeah, it's really unconventional. It'll look crazy as hell. There's going to be cross matches everywhere, but yeah, I mean, and you do want to give Houston a chance to get better. Like, last year at this time, we were all thinking that Mike Smith was going to be a huge defensive liability the whole year, and he scrapped his way to being a guy who stayed in front and made people shoot over him, and that was a lot of progress. So, like, I don't think Houston's ever going to be great, but like he's going to be better than he's shown so far.
Yeah, no, I'm, you know, Brian said this, I think, in one of his game columns, is that we don't need Houston to be Franz as a defender. You don't, right? You just need him to be passable, just basically an adequate defender. We're not looking for him to be an all Big Ten level defender. You know, me personally, just he's got to be able to switch when Eli tells him to, and that's clearly the game plan. And like, at a minimum, he's got to stop gambling for steals, right? Like, you just can't.
Yes.
Yeah, that's problematic because, like, so one of the things that I like to use when I evaluate players is what I call margin for error. Well, I usually do that on a 1 to 10 scale, and this is rhetorical, but I'm sure you guys know what Houston's margin for error is. It's not really high.
It's not high.
It's not high, right? So the thing that I love about a player like Diabate, on a scale from 1 to 10, his margin for error is probably a 10. If he makes a mistake, you're like Seth mentioned this, he switched three times when he's not supposed to, but it doesn't matter. That's the thing. Like, his margin for error is NBA caliber stuff. Like, he can make a mistake and you're never going to know about it. Well, if Houston gambles for a steal and he doesn't get that, like, it's, you're going to pay and at a pretty high clip. So I think if he can just stop gambling for steals and make his man make a contested shot and, you know, sort of make the switches that he's supposed to switch, we can live with him sort of getting blown by on the straight line drive from time to time. That's just part of the deal, and it happens to everybody, right? So if he can just not gamble for steals, make the necessary switches, I think Michigan's defense on the wing becomes a lot better.
All right. Thank you, Matt. We're going to take a break, come back, talk some hockey.
This is Matt Demrest, the owner of Homesure Lending. We're a local mortgage company here to help you purchase with confidence and refinance with ease. People don't get mortgages very often, so it can be confusing. We'll break down every single line item so that it all makes sense. And at the end of the day, if we're not giving you the best deal, we'll tell you to go with the other company. We're here to offer our simple mortgage guidance.
This is Seth Fisher from MGO Blog. Over the years, we've sent dozens of readers to use Homesure Lending, and every review that's come back has been raving. I myself used them to refinance after doing our original loan through our bank. I was amazed how much smoother the process was for our company. Loan. Brian used them, you should use them too.
Finding out whether it makes sense or not to refinance or getting pre-approved to buy a new home is easy. Head over to homesurelending.com, that's H-O-M-E-S-U-R-E, lending.com/mgoblog to find out more. Or call us at 734-531-9950. That's 734-531-9950. I've got two of my favorite people here with me, kind of an annual tradition, Cooper and Colby. Cooper, how old are you?
11.
Colby, how about you?
9.
Can I get a Go Blue?
Go Blue!
NMLS number 1161358, Equal Housing Lender.
The only thing we can be sure of about the future is that it will be absolutely fantastic. I'm thinking of the incredible breakthrough made possible by developments in communications.
Arthur C. Clarke's 1964 vision is now reality with SignalWire, a cloud platform that enables developers to build the applications that will reshape the future of communications.
These things will make possible a world in which we can be in instant contact with each other wherever we may be.
You can add cutting-edge, real-time video and audio to any product, website, or application with APIs and SDKs for developers of all skill sets. SignalWire is optimized for high quality and low latency communication functionality, the video, voice, and text messaging capabilities.
Almost any skill could be made independent of distance. Men will no longer commute, they will communicate.
See for yourself at SignalWire.com. Use code 2021 and receive $25 in developer credit. Go to SignalWire.com.
SignalWire Communications OGs, original geeks of programmable communication.
Under name, image, and likeness group licensing agreements, college athletes can now earn money. Still, the indirect consequence has many athletes chasing money, losing valuable study time for classes, practices, and games. As a group sponsor, you can offer a minimum of $100 in a one-time payment, or $20 or more per month on your credit card. Monthly payments by supporters, alumni, and season ticket holders of $20 or more will help athletes tremendously. Being a student athlete is not easy, it's hard. And until now, athletes were not allowed to work to make extra money while on a scholarship. On TeamFanClub.com, sponsors can make it easier for their favorite team or coach with a simple commitment to a group licensing agreement. Group licensing benefits all scholarship players, not just the starters. It provides fairness for all athletes who practice and train together for games. It provides security for players to stay at your school and not go into the transfer portal. Support student athletes today and sponsor a team at TeamFanClub.com.
It's painless. It's online. It's group ordering made easy for your next custom-printed apparel order. Pogo from Underground Printing will save you time and hassle. Whether you're selling shirts for a fundraiser, organizing a large event, or trying to collect sizes and payment for a family reunion, UGP is here to help. Save time and hassle every step of the way with our easy-to-use site. No more guessing what to order, chasing down people to pay, or wasting time trying to sort out the order. We'll set it up and you can just sit back and relax. We can even take care of individual shipping. To learn more about Pogo, visit us at any of our convenient locations or at pogo.undergroundshirts.com.
Welcome back to Amigo Radio, Glasgow Diagram.
Yeah, 710. 710, and brought to you, by the way, broadcasting on SignalWire, which is real-time video that technology that allows you to create interactive video experiences. Cities use it for virtual town halls. Musicians use it for fully interactive virtual concerts. Bloggers use it to record podcasts. And when I say bloggers, we all know I mean me. SignalWire was started by original geeks, software-defined real-time technology. They're Michigan fans. They'll be the ones personally supporting you. Try it today at SignalWire.com and use the code MUPPETS for $25 in developer credit. All right, guys, hockey.
All right, so Michigan comes off a sweep of Penn State in a very strange series where they played probably their two worst periods of the season in the first period of each game and exit those periods up 1-0. And then from there, they figure out how to get through the neutral zone without having to dump, and it's just kind of curtains for Penn State.
Yeah, I wouldn't necessarily say those were their two worst periods. So, I mean, they've kind of made a habit of this in a number of games where their first periods, I can think about four or five games where they've really struggled and but have turned it around, especially this weekend. But
well,
I
considering the competition level, like when you go up against the UMD or something, that's a little different.
Fair point. I mean, the second game, they also were in the box for, what, 7 minutes?
That's true.
First period.
With a ridiculous call. Like,
yeah, I told people to call me out in the comments about it because I was like, I can't get on board with saying that this is, like, an okay penalty. And one guy tried to sort of excuse it a little bit or say that that's just the rule, and that probably is. But, like, I mean, what are you supposed to do? It just was, it was too much like targeting for me.
Yeah, exactly. I actually referenced a targeting ejection in the Army game from a few years ago where there was a guy who was about to hit a Michigan running back, and the Michigan running back got hit by somebody else, and all of a sudden his head's 2 feet lower than it's supposed to be. And it's like, what is he supposed to do? Like,
yeah,
when you're going
to
tech a guy and he falls over before you get there. I mean, I understand that we need to protect players, but at the same time, you have to allow for the fact that, you know, that guy wasn't intending to blow that guy's head up. If he doesn't fall over, it's a completely legal hit.
The funny part was it was Keaton Pearson, and he hadn't played in like 3 games.
Right, and he's...
For one reason or another, I'm not really 100% sure, but then all of a sudden he's back in the lineup, and 5 minutes in, he's out for the rest of the series.
Yeah. Well, that happens. Anyway, yeah. I interrupted your thought process about the Penn State first periods.
No, the second game was the penalty one, but the thing is that they, like you said, they made adjustments, and then the third periods were, I mean, Alex and I talked about this on Monday, were like more or less irrelevant. Like, they finished the game on Thursday with a goal or two, but pretty much entering most of the third period on Friday, the game was over. I mean, Power scored, I think, to make it 5-1, and I mean, my notes were like, I wanted to ask Alex about his steak.
How was your steak, Alex?
It was solid. We'll leave it at that.
All right.
Hopefully it was chewy, though. Not too solid.
I was appreciative of the fact that the second game, which was on BTN Plus, was exactly like the first game, which was on BTN. So I didn't feel like I like missed anything. Like, you guys were like, oh, the second game was exactly like the first one. I'm like, great. Well, I saw the first one. It had great production value. It was a beautiful hockey game.
Well, the strange thing about the first game is that Penn State is lining themselves up across the blue line, which is not what Penn State does.
No.
Like, Penn State is a run-and-gun hockey team, and maybe they just don't have the talent this year to compete like that, like they usually do. But it just felt like they had an entirely different game plan than Michigan was expecting, and so it took them some time to get some idea of how they should get through the neutral zone with that.
They don't. Penn State does not have the talent to skate with Michigan, despite what the Friday commentators said at the end of the game after watching two games. But
also, like, just that's what teams are going to do to Michigan. I mean, we talked about this a couple weeks ago when I was on. It's just like, you know, okay, Minnesota might not, and, you know, Duluth didn't. And who else?
I think one thing important to point out is that Penn State, too, when they were really running and gunning a few years back and were good at it, they had Peyton Jones, who was a really good goaltender who saved a lot of shots that came his way. I don't think they have that caliber of guy. I was not impressed with Oscar Audio or Liam Soulier last weekend. And
did we lose Alex?
Well, I think he just dropped out.
State
oh, here he is. Oh.
And Michigan, you know, and sorry.
That's all right. Your connection's dropping
out. Yeah, I was
out.
Just saying that, like, it's...
Nope, we lost him again.
Why don't we take over, and then hopefully Alex's connection will fix itself. I mean, I don't know how much you can blame Audio for many of the goals on Thursday, because for whatever reason, Penn State was really disciplined about preventing zone entries, but they were not at all disciplined about cross-ice passes into Brendan Brisson's wheelhouse. And it wasn't even Brisson, it was Beniers, but those are still good shots. So the number of one-time
or Van Wy
against goal.
And Beecher. Beecher, the
Beecher
second one.
Too, yeah.
Three of Michigan's goals came on cross ice, like, slappers from that spot on the ice. Those are hard to deal with for anybody, and a couple of those were no-hopers. So, like, Audio, I thought, was kind of hung out to dry on Thursday. I don't know about his overall performance, but I didn't think that, like, one of the goals the BTN announcers were saying was soft. I'm like, dude, he's going across his crease. And he's got a heavy one-timer coming at him. That happens. I don't know.
I mean, their goaltending might not be up to Peyton Jones level, but I don't think that's why they lost the series.
No, but I mean,
they can't finish. And I mean, Michigan honestly shut down their power play.
Yeah. Well, one thing that stood out to me is, like, you know, Michigan didn't have a whole lot of chances in the first half of either of these games, but once they got one, it was in the back of the net. Like, their precision, their shooting percentage, when they get a good opportunity, they're going to finish it more often than just about anybody in the country.
I mean, we remember a few years ago on those, like, Josh Norris teams where they had about one or two guys and maybe a line and a half that could score. And if those guys weren't scoring, I mean, just no one was going to finish unless you got some greasy Van Wy, you know, kick in or something like that. And that's just not this team. And so when you, like you said, when you give them chances, Michigan is going to make you pay, and it's probably going to be a blowout if you give them too many.
Two personnel developments that I think are pretty important. One, Johnny Beecher comes back, looks more like a first-round pick than I think he has so far in his Michigan career. He's still got the size and speed. He's in the right places at the right time. He's centering a line with Van Wy on it, which is a little bit odd. But
last game he did, but yes.
Yeah. So, but that line with Beecher has been effective, and Beecher himself has been particularly effective.
Well, and you know, they tried to start last year with him being the first-line center. Alex brought this up last year when we were talking about it, and you actually brought it up this year when we were talking about where is he going to fit in. But if he's going to be the third-line center, that just makes this team even more hard to defend because he's a very different style of player, and if you put the right guys with him, which Michigan seems to have enough of the right guys to go on four lines if you need that to happen, that, I mean, now it's just like, where do you use your best defenseman? Because nobody in college hockey is going to have four to six good defensemen, other than maybe Minnesota, who we will see in a couple weeks. But I'm name another team. I mean, I can't think of one. So when his resurgence, and then like some of the things that he did, he had that zone exit where he like got the puck out of the zone after a forever shift, entered the zone, and then dropped it to Van Wy for a nice Van Wy goal. He also was sitting up and taking a slap shot. So those are two things that are not really what Johnny Beecher has done in his career. It's a lot of get the puck, go to the net, create something. And so when you add those elements, now you're like, I mean, it just seems like a very, very difficult team to try to play with and skate with. And at some point, you're going to get overwhelmed by one of the lines.
And also, I think it helps because the style of play that that Western was able to play against, Wisconsin was able to play against Michigan was that like 90s interference style. And one of the answers to that style was just like an Eric Lindros who just, you know, bashes his way right through everybody. And, Michigan, for all the skill they have, they didn't really have that size coming, especially at center. And when he gives them that that element, it just gives you another way that you can score and another way that you can't really prepare for Michigan, right? You can't just, like, focus on one thing and then you end up having to face an entirely different style.
Well, Michigan is bad in the corners, right?
Yeah.
So how does adding a 6'4" guy who can skate like the wind help you in the corners? Well, he can get to the puck when you dump it in, and he's also going to be a load once he gets there. So I think he's going to be an important player for Michigan. Another guy who I think really stepped it up last weekend was Dylan Duke.
Yes.
Who, was one of the highest scoring guys on the USA U18 team. And you look at him and through the first few games, you're like, I think I can kind of see why, but he's not actually producing. And in this game, you know, he's all over people on the forecheck. He's just hard to move when when Michigan has the puck in the offensive zone. He's just a pest. He reminds me of Brandon Kalanicki a lot.
Yeah, because he's smaller and just thicker. And
you're right. Stays. You hit him and he doesn't go anywhere.
Yeah, and his, like you said, his forecheck was really good. He created, I think, at least one goal, finished another, or no, he set up the Hughes goal. That was the other one, where he came in on a 2-on-2 rush, and Hughes just comes like a bolt of lightning from who knows where, and just had a nice saucer pass, lamp. Which is not, yeah.
There's like a pocket dimension where they keep all the Hugheses, and they just, you know, appear.
Every once in a while, one comes firing out, hopefully in the right direction. But he had a really nice pass to set up Hughes on that, too. And that's not sort of the Dylan Duke that we've seen this year. I mean, we've seen the bigger guy around the net, and this was a nice touch pass. So he's developing his game a little bit there, too. I don't know if he fits on the Beecher line. Alex mentioned earlier this year where that might be a lot of one thing. So maybe they do try to fit him onto one of the top two lines and move somebody else down. But he's definitely an intriguing piece. I was very happy with his weekend against Penn State, and it'll be interesting against Notre Dame, because Notre Dame that tonight and tomorrow is going to be similar. They're going to be bigger. They're going to be stronger in their own end. They're going to be tough on special teams, and you're going to probably have to kind of grind out some goals, and sort of the stuff that Duke did last weekend is something that Michigan is definitely going to need tonight and tomorrow.
The final guy who I think kind of stood out in a, oh, that's interesting way, was Steve Holtz.
Okay, I thought we don't make those references,
and now,
right? I thought you didn't.
Now he's Owen Power's defense partner with Nick Blankenberg out.
And is he still out? Is Blankenberg out? I mean, do we have a definitive thing going forward? Have we heard anything from last week? Because I have not.
Well, he was supposed to be back next week. I mean, last week.
Yeah.
So I would assume Blankenberg is back tonight, and I assume Steve Holtz is going to be on the third pairing, but he did not look out of place. He's 6'4". He's got decent mobility. He didn't do anything incredibly stupid. There were a couple of questionable shots from the perimeter that got blocked that are not plays in hockey.
Would you call those a downing?
Those were downings. I mean, let's just call it what it is. He had a couple of downings. But his ability to carry the puck into the zone shocked me. I mean, he's not Owen Power, but for a guy who was Michigan's ninth defenseman to come off the bench and like look kind of functional with the puck on his stick, I mean, that's a win. So I'm intrigued to see where this goes.
Alex, do you think if Blankenberg does come back, they'll switch Blankenberg back in, or do they like that thing that you were talking about with the Lightning do with Hedman?
No, they'll put Blankenberg back. I'd like to see Holtz go with Luke Hughes.
If
you're going to keep him in the lineup, that's the perfect contrast with Hughes being an undersized defenseman who doesn't really hit, and Holtz is going to go crazy. So,
I think Truscott is the perfect partner for Luke Hughes because you don't even notice he's there. So
he's a boring safety.
Yeah, exactly. That's who you put with. I mean, he's leading the team in plus minus, isn't he, Truscott?
He's up there.
Yeah.
He was one of the surprises. Like it's probably not after last week. It was after the Michigan State series where he had those few assists. But when you look at like Michigan's leading scorers and the stats up and down, and he's like in the top five, and you're like, okay, I get the first few, and then you get to Jacob Truscott, and you're like, well, what happened here?
Second assists are a very powerful metric.
Yeah, the Kent Johnson from last year. Yeah.
But so this is already a very talented team. They came through this Penn State series. They outscored them like 11-3 or something on the weekend. And they seem to be finding new pieces as we go along here. So,
guys that we didn't even preview.
Right. Like, and that's something that you expect from a team that's as young as Michigan, is that some guys are going to get better pretty fast. And so you're going to be better at the end of the season than you are at the beginning of the season. Like all those North Dakota teams that kind of start off 500 and you're like, aha, we got them this year. And then they're one seed at the end of the year, except Michigan has started out 10-2. So
Yeah, I think Nate Wells said, if this is what they look like in October.
Yeah, and I think they've got a lot of stuff to work on. Like, getting through a trap is like a big deal that they're going to have to get a lot better at. But and the other thing that happened in the series that I think was a great development is that Portillo, like, had to keep Michigan in a couple of games in the first period. And he did that against UMD, too. And you never really know with a goalie, even after like an NHL season's worth of games, but I feel much more confident in him than I did last week.
He was aces, man. Like, I just remember, like, he had three or four kick saves, and, like, he's been very good as sort of being just this giant Swede that you stuff next to the post, and you're just like, go ahead and shoot, like, you can't hit anything, and that's great, and that, because that is his biggest asset in that sense. But he's also, like, he made, like, two or three kick saves, I believe it was with his right pad, in transition, and you're like, you know, that's what Strauss Mann would do. You know, he could go post to post, and he could, like, have those acrobatic saves. And now you start seeing that stuff out of Portillo. It just takes everything to another dimension, because in some of those situations, trying to get the mountain to move from one side to the other, you're like, well, he's going to give up goals there at times, and that's just what you have. But he made a couple of saves, like, just like I said, with the right pad kicking out and super acrobatic that, I mean, I think I said Thursday, I wrote about how I thought it was his best game of the year.
Yeah, I think it was too. There was a save of his that made the SportsCenter top 10, which...
Well, there you go.
Don't get used to it. I don't think that's going to happen very often with this hockey team.
They also called him Portillo, I think, on the...
They did!
Yeah, I forgot about that. Yeah.
And I thought of you, Seth. Except I did it! But I still thought of you.
For the DeHulius reference?
DeHulius,
well,
yeah.
I called him Portillo on the... But the thing is that Dave Starman called him Portillo the whole game, and the play-by-play guy was getting it right. And at no point in a commercial break were they like, all right, let's get on the same page. Which one is it?
Did you guys see Michigan's line chart for Friday? They put his name on for the first time on the year and said they pronounce it Portillo.
Yeah, here's how it's spelled.
Yeah. And not just how it's spelled, but how it's pronounced. Because he wasn't it before that. Because you just look at it and be like, oh, I can pronounce that name. We don't need to waste some ink there. Apparently you do for Dave Starman.
All right, so Notre Dame coming up this weekend in approximately an hour and a half is the opener. Yep. How are we feeling about the Irish this year?
How do you always feel about the Irish when they come to Yost?
All right. I mean, maybe there was something different. I didn't know.
It's Notre Dame, right? Like, they're always going to be meticulously coached. They have their system. I don't know if they're good or not. They got swept by Minnesota, and they've really padded their goal differential by beating up on Atlantic Hockey teams and Wisconsin, which Michigan should have done. But regardless, that's in the past. They did beat Tech, who's probably decent in overtime. That's about all we know about them, unless you care about Holy Cross and beating them 9-3 on aggregate. Like, that's kind of been their season. They lost Alex Steves, but they have Max Ellis, who's scoring a ton of goals. They don't score a lot when they play good teams, and they score a lot when they play bad teams, so we'll see how that translates. They got a transfer goalie from Cornell, which is just whatever the opposite of justice is, because... you know, Cornell is the ultimate park the bus team in the ECAC, and he was an elite goalie. I think he was a Richter Award finalist, too, and then, the Ivies canceled their season, so he transfers to Notre Dame, and now just the perfect fit for that system. So, you know, there's always a chance that you give up the early goal and you lose 1-0, but Michigan also is the better team, so we'll see what happens.
Yeah, well, so I don't know how to pronounce this, Matt Galaja.
Galata, I think, is what
Galata,
it is.
Galata, 939.
Well, if you say it fast enough, then, like, it just kind of, you get through it so fast that if someone corrects you, you can be like, oh, you know, that's what I said.
Yeah, he was Cornell's starter for 3 years, 939, 921, 931, and this year so far, 943. So if Notre Dame is going to hang in this series, that's how they're going to do it.
Yep. And yeah, I also want to just point out, this is the beginning of a crucial stretch for Michigan where you have 4 weeks to the end of the season. You've got a bye weekend bye against Niagara. But then outside of that, you have Ohio State, Minnesota, and Notre Dame, the three teams in the conference who look vaguely like they have a pulse. And Michigan under Mel Pearson has traditionally gone crashing into the Christmas break. It's like been the worst part of the season uniformly in every year of his tenure. And then we get to January, and it's like, well, we have a new opportunity, but we also have to win like 10 of 12 games to make the tournament now. And it would be nice to not have that happen. Like last year, Michigan at this juncture was 4-0 on their season, and then they got swept by Notre Dame. They dropped a game where they gave up 9 goals in Happy Valley, and then they got swept by Minnesota, and they went from we're in the hunt for the league to like, well, now we have 5 losses and Minnesota's still undefeated, so nope. And it would be nice to not have that happen. And this is a crucial stretch where we're going to learn a lot about the team. And if they could go into the holiday break feeling good, that would be nice for a change.
I think I remember
and
getting
four
punked
of those
by
six
Ohio
games
State
are at
too.
Yost.
At Yost, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So this is this will be a critical section here. So, all right, guys, I think we are about done with our podcast.
Yep. Now I got to turn the music on, so you got to talk for 30 seconds.
Talk for 30 seconds.
That's how we do it.
I didn't know what we were doing. I prepared my gimmicky top 5 for best Tagovailoa sacks this year. But I assume you guys already did that?
I haven't watched any more Maryland than I've had to.
You definitely watched more Maryland than you had to. Alex had to watch Maryland, and then you're like, talking about their schemes, and I'm like, Seth, this is a disease.
Bye.
Boris is a mayor and a land surveyor with plans of his own. He hates Aruska, he hates a Volta, banned it from his home.